29. The second iteration looked almost luxurious after the patched-together saloon back in Independence. Two chandeliers filled with ivory candles lit the room, and small oil lamps sat on every table. Rugs covered most of the wooden floor, but where they didn't, Eli saw well-fitted planks. At least 3 dozen people filled the room, maybe as many as 50, enough that he couldn't get a good sense of the tavern's size. Dozens of conversations filled the air, none shouting, but each still straining to be heard over all the others. A man at one of the nearby tables grinned and stood up. "Harry," he said. "Eli. I was worried you two'd never get here."
"We're just a day late," she said. "No cause for alarm."
"A day you'll never get back," said James, his face wrinkled with a smile as he hugged her.
"At my age, you start counting them."
There was more gray in his hair than there had been yesterday, and a few strands of white as well, but his grin didn't seem a day older.
"We're going to grab some drinks," she said. "We'll catch up?"
"Course." He grabbed Eli's hand in a solid grip.
"Good to see you both again."
"He's awfully friendly," said Eli as they worked their way through the crowd. "Yesterday I thought he was going to clobber me for a few seconds."
"Yesterday for us," she said. "Looks like 3 or 4 years for him. He might know you better by now."
"What?" She glanced back at him over her shoulder.
"I told you before, we don't always meet each other in the same order."
"Even here?"
"Especially here.
That must get really confusing." She shrugged.
"Sometimes you just have to play dumb or be cryptic."
They reached the bar, and she waved down the man behind it. The bartender looked at them over a set of rectangular lenses wrapped with a wire frame. The left-hand lens had a crack running from top to bottom.
"Evening, sir. Ma'am."
His eyes flitted from their faces to their clothes and back.
"You folks part of this?"
"Absolutely," Harry said.
She pulled her coin purse out, fished through it, and spun a handful of coins onto the bar. Then she took 2 of them back, plucked out 3 different ones, and added them to the collection.
"This is for me and my partner here," she said, jerking her thumb at Eli. "You'll let me know when it runs out. If it doesn't, keep whatever's left."
The bartender eyed the coins for a moment.
"You sure about this, ma'am?"
She rapped her knuckles on the bar.
2 bourbons."
The bartender studied her face, shook his head, and swept the coins off the bar with his hand.
"Eli," she said, "why don't you find us a table while I wait for the drinks?"
He waded through the crowd. Men and women, more skin colors than he'd ever seen in his small Maine town, even during summer tourist season. 1 or 2 older than James, 2 or 3 looking barely into their teens. Most of them shared drinks and quiet conversations, while a few laughed with groups and others sat alone. He saw 2 more tricorn hats in the crowd and, proving Harry right, a fair number of derbies. One man wore a cowboy hat, and the woman across from him had one of the thin flat caps Eli always pictured newsboys wearing. A quartet of searchers played poker. 3 chips landed in the pot with the click-clack sound of wood on wood. A tray of them sat off to the side. Eli leaned in to peer at it, then realized it looked like an attempt to read cards over someone's shoulder. 2 of the players, a man and woman, glanced up at him. The man next to him, a broad-shouldered lumberjack-looking fellow, twisted around and looked up.
"Oh," he said, his scowl melting. "Hey, Eli, good to see ya."
He stared back at the man, at the other players, and remembered Harry's advice. "Thanks. You too." The lumberjack reached up to grab Eli's hand and squeezed it tight. The woman chuckled. Her dark hair was cut short with sweeping bangs, and a black fedora sat near her elbow. She wore a charcoal suit with an ivory shirt and a wine-colored tie. The ensemble made her look like a detective in an old noir movie. The lumberjack's eyes went from Eli to the tray of poker chips.
"Do you need a favor?"
"No," said Eli. "No, I'm good, thanks."
"Don't be a dork," the detective said to the lumberjack. "You're just confusing him."
"What?"
"He doesn't know us yet,"
she said, waving her free hand at Eli.
"This is his first trip to Hourglass, remember?"
The lumberjack blinked and looked up at Eli again.
"Christ,"
he said.
"Sorry about that."
Eli put up a hand.
"No,"
he said. "It's okay, I should have expected a little weirdness."
The detective chuckled again. She winked at Eli.
Take a green one, she said, nodding at the tray. It's a good color for you.
Now who's messing with him? Asked the fourth player, his eyes still on his cards. He hadn't looked up once.
On a guess, looking from table to tray, it looked like about a third of the poker chips were missing from the set. Eli reached out, ran his finger along the poker chips, and pulled out one of the ones with flaking green paint on the edge. Old nicks and scratches covered it. If the town was only a few months old, the tray of chips had passed through several owners before ending up at the second iteration.
Wait a minute, he murmured.
He flipped the poker chip over in his palm. His gaze dropped down to the columns of wooden tokens.
Mr. Teague, Harry shouted across the room, I do not see a table to put these drinks on.
Christ on a crutch, said the lumberjack. She's still calling him Mr. Teague. Is this their first week together?
The detective smirked and turned her attention back to the game.
Catch you on the rebound, Eli, she said, her eyes on her cards.
Eli stepped away from the card game and the tray of poker chips. He glanced down at the green one in his hand.
Do I need a favor? He murmured.
He looked up from the token and spotted a table with a flickering lantern. He found Harry in the throng with drinks held high, pointed, and saw her follow his gesture. They met at the table. Eli dropped his derby on the table as Harry sat. He fumbled with the lamp until the wick was a little higher. Harry placed her own hat on the table, then pushed one of the glasses across to him.
To your health,
she said, raising her glass. He mirrored her.
Kampai.
What?
It's Japanese. Her brows went up.
You speak Japanese?
No, but my junior year roommate studied it in college. He toasted with kampai all the time. Thought it made him look like a sophisticated world traveler. I picked it up after a few dozen times.
Sounds like a bit of a fool.
He was, but he was a nice guy, too.
What's it mean?
To your health, I think. She pursed her lips, nodded, and tipped her drink back. Eli pushed out a breath and swallowed a mouthful of bourbon. It was warm and smooth, and he felt the soft prickle it left along his tongue. He blew out again, and a third time.
Good, isn't it?
Ha! I should not be doing this on an empty stomach.
Truer words,
she said, raising her own glass again. He dropped the wooden token on the table.
The favors are old poker chips.
She nodded.
Yes, they are. What of it?
I thought they were, I don't know, custom-made or something. Harry snorted.
No, people just grabbed what they needed. This is where a good number of favors get swapped, after all.
She gestured at the poker chip on the table.
Is green going to be your color?
It looks like it, yeah. He gestured around them. So? Explain. She sipped her bourbon and studied his face.
You're across the street and you're here, he said. And you don't try to cheat history by going to warn yourself about anything. You could warn...
Eli stopped before he said the name. He looked at the table for a few moments, a fine piece of furniture made from dark lacquered wood. Then he took another drink and checked out the chandelier. Harry's gaze didn't falter.
Outside, you asked why we had our wedding reception here.
He nodded, but kept his eyes from hers.
Yeah, I know you said it's safe, but it just seems risky. Especially if you all keep coming back here. Isn't this a, what do they say, a target-rich environment for them?
She took another sip.
The faceless man won't come here, ever. This one week in this one town is the one place searchers are safe from them.
Eli looked around the bar. Searchers lounged in chairs and leaned against the bar. A woman in what looked like a gray Civil War jacket rested her boots on a table next to a plate decorated with crumbs and streaks of gravy. A felt-top hat balanced on her forehead, shading her eyes. On the far side of the room, an older man with a curling white mustache and an eye patch told a quiet story to three interested listeners and one distracted man while they all drank.
Okay, he said. So they're relentless zealots who respect town boundaries.
She barked out a laugh.
Why?
Harry swallowed another mouthful of bourbon.
This is going to be one of those explanations that's been passed down the chain,
she said.
Are you going to get upset and interrupt?
He snorted and tossed back a shot's worth of his own drink.
Abraham Porter designed Hourglass to be our safe harbor. We all come here, once, twice, hopefully three times during our life as searchers. So many of us overlapping at once creates a situation which could have repercussions throughout history were it to be disrupted. For example,
she continued,
my wedding party is going on right now across the street. It sets off ripples as the people there interact with each other and with the town's residents, the piano player, the bartender, the cook, the serving girls, the other townsfolk out for a drink or perhaps kept up by our revelry, the sheriff and the deputy who check in on us. Do you follow so far?
He nodded and raised his glass again.
Those people interact with their families, bunkmates, what have you. The thing is, many of them also interact with us over here.
She gestured across the bar with her glass.
James is here, and Irene is trying to devour him with her eyes. But he's also over it the first time around right now, almost 20 years younger, and flirting with one of the Wang sisters, and also with the young boy who plays piano. Two or three of these people might meet up tomorrow and whisper about their nights, not realizing they're all talking about the same man.
Eli nodded again. Okay, that makes sense.
And that's why the faceless men stay away. As long as we all follow the rules, this town is a Gordian knot in the lines of history. It's having hundreds, maybe thousands of effects, and all of these effects loop and twist and tie back to here and now.
She waved her hand at the door.
Out there, they can pick us off one or two at a time and neaten up whatever problems it causes in history. But here, during this week, it would be catastrophic. One extreme action here would affect thousands of different threads at once.
She swallowed another mouthful of bourbon.
Melodramatic as it may sound, attacking this town could destroy America.
Eli sipped his own drink. And you're sure it's safe?
We know it's safe, because we've all seen it. I've already been here this week. Remember?
She waved her free hand at the crowd.
So has everyone else in this room, and some of us maybe down the street at the Paradox, too. The faceless men never set foot in Hourglass.
So why don't you just stay here? Take some time off, not... He glanced around the crowded room. Not be part of the search.
Stay here for a week? That's the plan.
What?
It's only 1 week, she said. If we all tried to come back again and again, we'd start tripping over ourselves and upset the system Porter created. That's why no one goes back and forth between the saloons. Hourglass is perfectly safe as long as we all follow the rules.
Ah. She looked around the room, had another sip, then leaned in closer to Eli.
We're on the right track with Hawkins.
Are you sure?
I am. Ask me how.
Someone bumped Eli and jostled his drink. He glanced up, then back at Harry. How? She moved her glass side to side in front of her, gesturing at the room.
I know everyone here.
Okay. Harry watched his face for a moment.
Think, Eli,
she said.
How can I know everyone here?
Well, he glanced around the room and caught glimpses of the detective, James, the lumberjack, an Asian woman in a red dress, the man with the eye patch, the top hat woman. Are they all part of the chain?
Some of them. Others are friends and acquaintances from different chains, but I know them all. How?
He picked up the green-edged poker chip and flipped it back and forth between his fingers. If you know them, he said, it means they came before you.
Yes.
Eli looked around again. There's nobody, he lowered his voice. There's nobody here who comes after you? After us? She shook her head.
Not a one. The searchers end with us, with our generation. There are no more links.
She picked up her glass.
Hawkins is it.
Eli nodded once. Or maybe the faceless men wipe us all out.
Oh, you're a cheerful drunk.
She threw back the last of her bourbon. The empty glass came down hard on the table.
I need another,
she said.
You?
Good for now, thanks. She stood up and strode back across the tavern. Someone shuffled by in the crowd, patted Eli's shoulder, and said, "Greetings, programs," with a laugh. The stranger vanished into the crowd before Eli got a look at him.
Instead, he found himself eye to eye with a Latina in a rumpled white tuxedo. She raised her brows and stared back at Eli over her spectacles until he looked away. He caught a glimpse of the card game as people parted for a moment and locked eyes with the noir detective. She blew him a kiss, tossed three chips into the pot, and then the shifting bodies hid her table again. A moan of despair from the lumberjack rose over the crowd, followed by laughter. Harry returned with three glasses and clunked them on the table.
"Good to see you haven't wandered off," she said.
"That's why there's three saloons," he said, "first, second, and last. Whenever you come back to the town again, you go to the next one so you don't run into yourself. And you're running into everyone else in more or less the right order." She bowed her head.
"Very good, Eli. Took me a while to catch that one when it was first explained to me."
"What happens if someone tries to come more than three times?"
"To the best of my knowledge, no one's ever made it that far."
"And nobody goes back and forth between the bars?" Harry froze, then shook her head.
"No," she said. "Not yet."
She selected a glass, saluted him with it, and took a sip. Eli sighed and had another sip of his bourbon. "Who are the other drinks for?"
"One for me," she said, raising her glass again. "And I got you another one anyway. I didn't want to go back to the bar again in a few minutes."
"Who's the third one for?"
"Also for me. I just told you I didn't want to go back to the bar. Please keep up.
I'm trying my best."
"Normally I prefer not to imbibe on such a scale. It's not good for driving, and accidents on the road are bad enough when one isn't traveling through history. But we're not on the road at the moment, and..."
She gazed down at her drink, then took a sip. "And?" Harry looked at him with hard eyes.
"And I'm about to do something I find unpleasant. So the bourbon helps."
"Hopefully it doesn't involve plans for me," Eli said. Another sip.
"I'm afraid it does, Eli."
His own glass paused halfway between the table and his mouth.
"Nothing sinister, I assure you," she said. "Well, not to the best of my knowledge, just unpleasant."
She stared down into her glass again.
"More for me than you."
The woman with the top hat started awake and grabbed for her hip, where an olive-green nylon holster protruded from inside her Civil War jacket. Her hat tumbled to the table, rolled, and fell to the floor. A man in a camel-colored overcoat bent to scoop it up before the crowd trampled it. She relaxed and thanked him. Harry cleared her throat.
"I need you to go across the way. To the first time around."
"What?"
"Just go over there, buy a drink for yourself. Two if you like."
She reached into her coat pocket and dropped two quarters on the table. The two coins she'd set aside before. "You just said the whole point of the saloons is that people don't go between them."
"Usually."
She set a finger on each coin and slid them across the table to him. "Are you trying to get me in trouble or something?"
"You won't get in trouble.
But I thought people aren't supposed to meet themselves."
"You won't meet yourself," she said. "You're not over there. Not yet, anyway."
He picked up the two quarters. "Are you trying to get rid of me?"
"No, Eli, I don't think so, anyway."
"You don't think so?"
"I don't know all the details. I just know you have to go over there."
"How?"
"How which? I presume by walking."
"How do you know I have to go over there?" She picked up her drink again, studied it, swallowed a mouthful of it.
"Because I saw you over there."
He blinked. "What?" She sighed.
"On the second night of our party, the Tuesday night, Christopher wandered off to the bar and ended up talking with someone I didn't know. A man I'd never seen before, with a short wool coat, a derby, and a few days' worth of whiskers."
Eli glanced at the derby on the table and let his gaze continue down to his peacoat.
"Whatever they were talking about," she went on, "I could see Christopher became very serious. I asked him about it later, and he wouldn't tell me anything. Said it wasn't important. I'd forgotten about it altogether until we were standing outside, looking over it the first time around. I remembered what night it was. And I realized how you were dressed."
He rubbed the coins together between his fingers. "That was 9 years ago."
"9 years ago,"
she said,
"is right across the road."
He took a sip of his own drink. "And you think it was me?" She shrugged and didn't meet his eyes.
I guess we'll find out, won't we?